You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, would you like to see Wisconsin give citizens the ability to vote on a direct ballot initiative? Senator Ron Johnson and Governor Tony Evers have each raised the idea lately. We'll find out how it works and the effects it has in other states and countries around the world. First, Ellen Clark joins me. It's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. First day of the drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
In fact, listener support is the largest piece of funding that makes Central Time and all the other shows you enjoy possible. That's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so very important.
Last hour, we heard from 19 new and returning members. Mm. Thank you so much for those gifts. Now, this is fun. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000. This generous match from current members, including a member in Iola, it means they're going to match every dollar that you give.
Incredible. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support for the programs you love right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part, probably, because we're commercial-free. But that means we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal, and business sponsors, they're important. And there's another source that's a big deal, too.
It sure is. The largest piece of funding for WPR program comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of how things are done here. When you give, you keep the quality, independent news, talk, and information on the air. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give a gift. We've got a special thank you gift for you available today only. It's the 2022 WPR Enamel Pin. It features a radio tower design. You can support Wisconsin Public Radio programs with your gift of any amount and get that gift matched dollar for dollar at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Ask for your very own pin. Wear it with pride to tell the world you are a WPR fan.
That's right. Now, if you've ever sat in your car to hear the end of something on WPR, you've experienced a driveway moment. I'm pretty sure you probably know what I mean because chances are you've had one just recently.
Support your source for radio so compelling you don't want to miss a word. Give now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. If you're driving right now, be safe. Pull over and make that gift.
Safety first. WPR is personally important to you, and it's probably also important for you that everyone in the state has access to this high-quality information and entertainment.
So become a member. With a contribution of maybe $10 a month or a one-shot $120 gift, you're not only doing something great for yourself, you're doing something great for the whole community. WPR is listener-supported. That is why your participation is such a big deal. Give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, we have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect up to $3,000. So if you were thinking, maybe I want to support Wisconsin Public Radio with a $1,500 gift, done.
Yeah.
Doubled, we meet our goal. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Support Wisconsin Public Radio, and it will go twice as far right now.
Get your gift doubled and show off your public radio pride when you wear your limited edition WPR enamel pin. That's available today only while supplies last when you make a gift of any amount. And get it doubled. Support WPR programs. Get it doubled. Get that pin at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, consider becoming one right now. It's really easy to set up, and you'll make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. Do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to provide reliable support for the programs you love.
Thomas in Fox Point says, I support all of the programming at WPR. Thank you, Thomas. I'm guessing Thomas means especially Central Time, but he didn't say that, so I can't assume that.
It's inferred.
Right, yeah, exactly. Lisa in Sheboygan says, I appreciate the educational aspect of the Ideas Network and excellent Wisconsin news coverage. Thank you, Lisa. I just talked to somebody at our listener meetup in Central Wisconsin, somebody who homeschools her kids, and we are on the curriculum. Central Time is part of that. Maybe you do that with your students at school, with your kids at home. Maybe you just count on us to learn yourself. However you use us, we're glad you're listening, and we hope you'll give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Get it doubled right now. We really do appreciate it. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Should Wisconsin voters be able to approve ballot initiatives, essentially giving them the chance to set laws in Wisconsin, sidestep the legislature? Governor Tony Evers said maybe yeah earlier this week. Evers proposed amending the state constitution to allow initiatives, in part to allow citizens to do things like repeal the state's 1849 ban on almost all abortion. Here's Governor Evers speaking on Wednesday.
If Republican legislators aren't going to uphold the will of the people, then the people of the state should have the right to take a stand at the ballot box.
That's Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Republican Senator Ron Johnson hinted at the idea as well this last week with the concept of giving citizens more of a voice on an issue. He told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel last week he thinks the 1849 law should have exceptions for rape and incest and that, quote, we really ought to poll the citizens and I'd rather do it through a direct referendum, unquote. Many states do have a binding referendum process to change laws. Wisconsin does not. Leading Republicans in the state legislature say they don't want to make that change. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to have this thing in Wisconsin like some states have where voters go to the poll to vote up or down to change a particular law? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you worry about problems with it? Would you like the opportunity to vote on, say, laws about abortion in particular? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you live in one of our neighboring states, like Michigan with an initiative process, how does it work there? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Susan Stokes is the Tiffany and Margaret Blake Distinguished Service Professor and Director of the Chicago Center on Democracy at the University of Chicago. So welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We've got, you know, occasionally we get to vote on local funding referenda or advisory referenda. We can have a constitutional amendment that starts in the legislature. But we read headlines in Wisconsin and other states where they just go and vote on a law. How common is that around the country?
It's pretty common. There, the majority of states have some kind of ballot initiative provision. And what you've been pointing to is a basic difference between referendums, which are put on the ballot by usually the legislature, and initiatives that go on the ballot because citizens have proposed them, and there's usually a signature drive, a petition to put them on the ballot. And there's been, you know, a lot of interest, I think, recently in the ballot initiative because that gives citizens, at least in theory, a chance to really initiate legislation that the legislature may want to avoid.
Right. We've heard people refer to the will of the people, and a vote like this, whether it's started, you know, initiated by lawmakers or initiated by people, as a direct vote, as a more democratic way to represent the will of the people. What do you think of that argument?
You know, I think that it's an argument that gains credibility because we see political elites, resisting the decisions of the people when they go the way they don't want to. In other words, if this weren't a threat at all to the political, you know, political class, political leaders, they would not bother to resist initiatives that go through that they don't like. And there are a number of examples in recent years where petitions drives have put a measure on the ballot and there's a decision that goes against the preferences of the majority of the legislature and the legislature tries to find ways to keep from having to kind of follow the will of the people. But it certainly can be, you can have a happy story where the people, where you force public policy a little closer to the preferences of what we political scientists call the median voter, sort of the typical average position of somebody in the state, even when the legislature may be a little bit off that median because of gerrymandering or rural biases and so forth.
Do you see a potential downside or an actual downside for these citizen initiated ballot measures?
Well, California has a long history of tawdry ones. In fact, the academic literature, it takes a pretty dim view of citizens' initiatives because it has been very focused on the California experience. So you get fake citizens initiatives, often referred to as AstroTurf. So, you know, there's true grassroots and then there's fake grass, which is AstroTurf. And that's when lobbyists come in or maybe some special interest comes in and puts a measure on the ballot, maybe to get something through that they want to get through themselves, but often it's to kind of counter an initiative put on the ballot by people, by real citizens that they don't like. So there are problems. There also are problems, you know, we see frequently legislatures just saying, we're not going to do that, or going to court to sort of say, to get courts to say that there's a legal reason not to allow the change to be made that's been proposed, or imposing like regulations that kind of basically go against the spirit of the initiative. So it's not just getting something passed is not the end of the story.
We heard from Brett in Milwaukee, who couldn't stay on the line. He says he's been wondering for a long time why referenda aren't more common in our democracy, including at the federal level. How do we stack up compared to the rest of the democratic representative government world, Susan, when it comes to these kind of votes?
So a majority of countries of democracies around the world do have mechanisms of direct democracy, mostly referendums, to some extent citizen initiatives. The United States is unusual in not having referendums at the national level. Why we don't have them more often, like why we don't see them more often in the world? Well, it's, you know, if you think about it, representative government means turning, you know, voting for who we want to make decisions and then turning over decision making to them. And often the people who are our representatives are reluctant to give the people the right to make decisions. So usually you have to explain why they're doing that in the first place. And it's interesting to watch what's the discussion in Wisconsin, because it hints at some of the reasons why politicians do decide to turn decision-making over to the people again. One is that they're trying to work around a kind of reluctant, recalcitrant opposition or legislature. Another is they're just trying to kind of protect themselves from responsibility. They can say, you know, I'm not sure what I want about on, say, abortion, but let's just let the people decide.
We're talking to Susan Stokes from the University of Chicago, looking at citizen ballot initiatives to change state laws, something Wisconsin doesn't have. Senator Ron Johnson raised the notion, at least, of an advisory vote on abortion. Governor Tony Evers suggested a constitutional amendment to make this possible in the state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want this from Wisconsin, a way for citizens, maybe a petition drive? It gets something on a statewide ballot. If it's passed, it goes into law. We don't have that here right now. Should we? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Susan Stokes from the University of Chicago, looking at ballot initiatives and referenda, how they work in different states and countries. After two top incumbent politicians up for re-election floated the notion here in Wisconsin. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Have a mini referendum on referenda. Kevin starts us off in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi. I would very much be in favor of citizen-initiated balloting like this. If the legislature is not going to represent the will of the people, then we should be able to go around them. They are supposed to be our representatives, not our leaders. Thank you.
Kevin, thanks for the call. And that notion you mentioned a few moments ago, Susan, when people feel like they aren't represented by leaders in heavily gerrymandered states in one direction or another, that I think is a fairly common feeling.
You know, and there are some happy stories to tell about public policy becoming more representative as a result of citizen initiatives. And one of the recent ones that worked out well from that perspective is in Missouri, not very far away from either me in Illinois or you in Wisconsin, where there was, in 2020, there was a citizen initiative to force the legislature to accept Medicaid expansion. The legislature, for I think kind of ideological reasons, was resistant to that. They talked about problems with, you know, eventually where would the funding come from and so forth. But there was a lot of groundswell of opinion that the state should accept Medicaid expansion. And it was put on the ballot and it passed. It passed quite by a substantial margin. The legislature tried to not, you know, comply with the decision. And eventually went to the state Supreme Court, and the Missouri State Supreme Court said, no, this was a legitimate initiative. Everything was done properly. And that, and this is now the law. So Medicaid expansion had to happen. There are all kinds of less happy stories I could tell you, but it certainly is, I think Kevin is right. It's certainly possible to redress some of the problems of gerrymandering and just the kind of polarization we have, where state legislators are often elected from districts that are heavily gerrymandered or just very, very extreme with regard to partisan identification. And that means that they're not accountable to a larger state constituency. And so the initiative can redress that problem.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. William joins us now in Green Bay. William, hi.
Good afternoon. This is a very interesting subject because my pet peeve is I look at politicians themselves and I really feel like there should be term limits for them because I don't believe that this was set up to be a career. And unfortunately, too many people get in for a very long period of time. And I always think, well, who's going to vote themselves to not have a job after a certain period of time? And so I think that being able to have a referendum from a state standpoint, to be able to put that out there and change that if that's what the will of the people becomes.
Interesting. So, William, thanks for the call. So a citizen initiative as a balance to maybe the entrenched personal interests of long-term legislators, Susan.
Yeah, no, interesting. I think term limits is a slightly different topic. I think many political scientists sort of feel that the downside with term limits is that they potentially turn the office holder into sort of a dictator in their last term. That is, they're no longer accountable to voters, and so they can kind of go off into doing things that may be more of particular interest to them. But you know, there's another side to that argument as well. Let me just point out, Rob, that it's interesting to be talking, probably appropriate to be talking about initiatives and referendums on a day when Russia has begun an initiative process in another country to get people to, in a situation of war, to get Ukrainians to vote to join Russia. So if you want an example of the most extreme abuse of a referendum, there you have it.
I wanted to ask you about that. That's an extreme example, but it is not uncommon in the world for this would be a referendum initiated by a leader to abuse this process to grant someone more power, right?
Happens a lot. And it's happened in Russia before. Speaking of term limits, weakening term limits, Putin held a referendum that allows him, that aggrandized his power and also got him out of term limits. When you have a semi-dictator or a kind of elected autocrat who holds referendums, or that usually is for very self-interested reasons. You often find that the information available to voters is very limited. So in general, those are not good examples of honest sort of expression of the popular will. On the other hand, it does sometimes happen that dictatorships hold referendums to try to extend their rule and give themselves more legitimacy, and they lose. So that happened in Chile under Pinochet in 1988. They kind of locked themselves into a process of a referendum on extending the rule of Pinochet. And lo and behold, everybody's surprised that they lost, and the no side won, and that was the beginning of the transition to democracy in Chile. Now, that's a less common than the kind of darker story of these referendums and initiatives being abused under these kinds of regimes.
Susan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Susan Stokes, professor and director of the Chicago Center on Democracy at the University of Chicago. She joins us for a look at binding statewide referendum votes, which we currently don't have here in Wisconsin. Coming up, the product of a years-long effort to uncover the history of racism on UW-Madison's campus is now open to the public. We'll talk to the curator of the new Sifting and Reckoning exhibit. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Ellen Clark is with me. The largest source of funding for WPR programs comes from listeners like you. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year. Take that important step when you give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And it is an important step because we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000 in effect right now. It is a great time to donate because current members, including a member in Iola, will double every single dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio, so double the impact of your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In that last conversation, we looked at the idea of these statewide ballot initiatives. Not a thing in Wisconsin, but it came up over this last week. Two incumbent candidates for statewide office brought it up. We dug into how these things work, what they mean, the pros and the cons. It's something we do a lot with big issues. Often as they arise on the campaign trail, we step away from the heat of the political ads and dig into what we know, what we don't know about these important topics. It's the kind of conversation you can count on here on Central Time.
That's right. And WPR is listener supported. So that means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes those many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
If you're looking for an easy way to make a gift to WPR, become a sustaining member with automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or credit card.
And a lot of people give $15 a month on this plan. Some give $100 a month. The amount is completely up to you. As a sustainer, you're an ongoing member of WPR, and you provide reliable funding for your favorite radio station. Start today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've heard a lot of election coverage on Central Time in the last year. There's more to come between now and Election Day on November 8th. You value this extensive coverage. It helps you understand the issues and make informed decisions.
And Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR are your sources for reporting the analysis you need this election season. It's just that simple. Your support is vital. You keep our entire community up to date with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Get your enamel pin, a brand new design available today only while supplies last with your gift of any amount, and get the dollar amount of your gift matched right now. It all makes it a great time to give, a great day to give this first day of the drive. Support your favorite public radio network with your gift right now. Online at WPR.org or give us a call at 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, UW-Madison's new Sifting and Reckoning exhibit looks at the history of discrimination on the campus and resistance to it. The curator of that exhibit joins us next. First, it's our fall member drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Ellen Clark joins me now. You count on the Ideas Network for great conversations. It's your gift of any amount that makes it all possible. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for WPR programs, and that's why your support is so important right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And it is so important right now. We have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including a member in Iola. We have about $1,400 left to that challenge. We want to meet this goal. So your gift right now of $50 turns into $100. $100 turns into $200, and so on and so forth. So take advantage of this match and double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Join us daily on Central Time from 3 until 6. You're going to get a wide range of topics to make your afternoon more interesting. Today alone, Food Friday, helping us cut down on food waste in our own kitchens, food deserts in Wisconsin, places that don't have enough access to affordable, healthy food nearby, a look at ballot initiatives in Wisconsin. A lot of great stuff going on here.
It sure is. So give now, support the programming and the news information you get on Central Time at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And everyone should make the gift that works for them. And for you, that might be a gift of $100 or $200 a month.
Maybe that's what you pay for your cable or your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do maybe every day. Put a value on it. Like other stuff that's important to you, do it right now. Online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Today only, be one of the first 500 people to make a donation of any amount, and you'll receive a bonus gift, the new WPR enamel pin. This retro-inspired pin features a WPR radio tower broadcasting your favorite programs across Wisconsin. The vibrant orange and blue design will add a bit of flair wherever you choose to display your pin.
I'm going to put my pin on my gym bag right next to my Ulysses S. Grant for President pin.
This would be a great accessory on a jean jacket.
What wouldn't I put the WPR enamel pin on? It's very stylish, very impressive.
The enamel pin would look great on my new WPR tote bag.
It's only available today. Get yours now with your gift of any amount. Here's how.
Make that gift, get that pin at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and get your gift doubled with this match still in effect. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Ellen Clark. Your support during this fall member drive makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. Your gift on this first day of the drive, or 10 or 20 bucks a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a difference.
And supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time, especially with that dollar-for-dollar match in effect. All we'll need is your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Then your gift will support the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
How easy is that? Support the programs you love right now when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And then you can take another great step. Check with your company's community relations team to see if they might match your gift.
A lot of corporations will match their employees' donations, even if they're retired. So thank you for going that extra step for the programs you care about after you make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And again, lots of matches going on. We've got this dollar-for-dollar match in effect. We have about $1,400 left to it, and we want to meet that goal. Help us. We don't want to leave any money on the table. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
We heard from Dean in Eau Claire. Dean says, "We give because my family finds continuous joy and knowledge in wonderful programs like Central Time and The Larry Miller Show." Dean says, "Thank you, WPR. Thank you, Dean. How about you? Join in, support your favorite programs right now with your gift online at WPR.org or a call at 888-202-2552. Thank you." It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The Chazen Museum of Art in Madison has a new exhibit looking at the history of discrimination on UW-Madison's campus. It's called Sifting and Reckoning, UW-Madison's History of Exclusion and Resistance. The exhibit is the product of the Public History Project at UW-Madison, a years-long effort started by former Chancellor Rebecca Blank to reckon with racism and exclusion on the school's campus through history. There's an online version of the exhibit at reckoning.wisc.edu. Casey Lucchini-Butcher is the director of UW-Madison's Public History Project. She's the curator of the Sifting and Reckoning exhibit. Casey, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. I'm so happy to be here.
This is a huge project with over 170 years of history. How did you start going about trying to uncover some of these stories?
Yeah, you know, when I first took this job, it was definitely a daunting task to think about how we tell these stories about UW, and in particularly stories that often haven't been told before. One of the great things that we did is, you know, we leaned on resources that were already written and already published. Lots of fantastic scholars have looked at the history of UW-Madison and the state of Wisconsin. And so we really took a survey of kind of what was out there. And then from there, we asked our community what they thought we should research. And we hunted down leads and we worked really closely with the UW archives to really look at how we could tell this rich history of not only discrimination, but also resistance through a lot of different stories that really look at a lot of different communities across time. And so in the exhibit, I think you'll see we cover not only a wide range of time, but also a wide range of different types of exclusion and alongside really powerful stories of resistance.
Before we dig into a couple of those stories, can you talk about the why of it? What do you see as the value of going back and exploring these stories behind the institution?
Yeah, you know, history is kind of one of those things that often isn't recognized, but is silently always with us, right? It's shaping our society and the things that are happening. And so, you know, UW-Madison, when they decided to do this project and when former Chancellor Rebecca Blank really commissioned it, you know, she viewed this historical work as a tool, as a way that our university could really take an honest look at its past and that we could use those findings to inform a better future for UW, to make a more inclusive campus. And we really feel that, you know, without the history, we can't take those steps forward to make a better campus community that's more inclusive for all.
Going back to the beginning, you looked at Native American culture, the Native American residents of the land that is now houses the UW campus, and how some Native practices were then portrayed by students on the UW campus. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, when you start an exhibit, you always have to ask yourself, where do we start the story? And for us, the story really begins with the 10,000 year history of Dejope, what is now called Madison. So we really unpacked that history of what was here before the university and how the university was founded and how we, got the land that we are now currently occupying. And one of the examples, I think, of a kind of cultural practice on campus that allowed us to really enrich and enliven this story was a ceremony that was called the Pipe of Peace ceremony. It was one of the most popular ceremonies on campus for about 50 years. It was a part of commencements. And the senior class passed a peace pipe to the junior class. And so these are white students who are dressed up in what they think is Native American clothing. It is not culturally accurate. And they are doing this kind of faux Native American ceremony. And they're trying to, I think, you know, appropriate this culture in a really messy and a really complicated way. And one of the things that we have is the actual pipe of peace on display in the gallery. So we have the object. It's a really interesting object to view, and we have an entire kind of history of this ceremony, including, you know, talking about its popularity. It was so popular and so well known that it was featured in the National Geographic magazine in 1937 as something that was quintessentially Wisconsin.
You also highlight some of the first students and first graduates from different ethnic, racial, and religious backgrounds. I'll say I was surprised in some cases the years were later than I expected to find in some cases. Could you share some of the experiences they had?
Yeah. So, you know, we wanted to kind of, I think, do two things with the first. We wanted to celebrate these people and give them their kind of day in the sun, right? To really talk about, you know, what it was like to be the first and to give these people that kind of name recognition on campus. And at the same time, we wanted to be really honest about their difficult experiences on campus, right? This was not easy to be the first. It was often very challenging, very isolating. And so we were kind of doing both with those. So you meet these individuals, and I think you learn a lot about their resilience, right? About how they kind of survived on this campus and often how they thrived on campus by finding community, by finding other folks. And so some of them are really late. You know, I think one of the ones that's most surprising for people is the first Hmong graduate of UW-Madison, which happens a lot later than people think. But we also have some others. The first Native student to graduate from UW is actually in 1950. So again, you know, almost 100 years after the founding of the university.
And I want to advance a little bit here and listen to a film you uncovered as a part of your research on this project. There's some backstory, but the film shows the head of the Wisconsin NAACP and other Black people trying to find housing in Madison in 1961, getting turned down by landlords. This was shot undercover. Let's listen to a clip of an interaction with a Madison landlord. Warning for listeners, it's an old film, a little tough to hear. I'll recap some of it.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm sorry, but I can't let you have it. Not in this neighborhood.
Oh, why is that? The people in this neighborhood or what? Yeah.
I guess you know why. Well, I'm sorry it's that way, but I don't want to have trouble with my neighbors.
So the landlord saying there, I can't let you have it. I guess you know why. I'm sorry it's that way, but I don't want to have trouble with my neighbors. Can you tell us some of the story behind this film?
Yes. So Stuart Honish, who was a filmmaker in the Bureau of Audiovisual Information at UW-Madison, alongside Lloyd Barbie, who is one of the first Black state legislators in the state of Wisconsin, you know, they are working on housing discrimination issues, and people keep telling them, well, that stuff's not happening in Madison, Wisconsin. So they set out to kind of prove it, and they do this undercover film footage. And they make this film, and when the university finds out, the university restricts the film. And they actually say they're going to dispose of it. And so Lloyd Barbie and Stu Honish both died thinking that this film had been burned. But really, it had been sitting in the UW archives since 1962. And part of the work our project did was to work with the UW archives, to work with Kat Fan, who's the digital media archivist, and to also work with UW's Office of Legal Affairs to lift that restriction. And then thanks to Wisconsin Public Television, we had it digitized so it could be preserved, but also so that people can access it online, and it can be accessed on our website. And so the film is this kind of 12 minutes of this undercover footage that was taken in Madison. And in it, you can see that Black people are being explicitly denied housing because of their race. So not only was it, I think, really powerful in the 60s, but it today is a very powerful historical research object for us to really have an honest conversation about the experience of Black people trying to find housing in Madison.
Talking to Casey Lucchini-Butcher, director of UW-Madison's Public History Project, curator of the new Sifting and Reckoning exhibit, an in-person exhibit at the Chazen Museum at UW-Madison, and an online version as well at reckoning.wisc.edu. Casey, when it came into the classrooms and lecture halls, what did you find about the ways that racism or exclusion showed up there?
Yeah. So, you know, we have this kind of thematic arrangement, which you're doing all this work and highlighting all of our themes. So thank you so much. And one of those was academic life, right? We're an educational institution. We wanted to really think about the experience in the classroom. And so we spend that section talking, you know, about students with disabilities and about how difficult it can be to physically access classroom spaces. We also talk about the experience of students of color and some of the microaggressions that they face in the classroom. And we also talk about marginalized faculty and staff and their experiences in the classroom. And alongside that, we, you know, try and tell stories as well about the ways that these groups really work to shape their classroom experience and to really change the classroom. So we highlight a lot of the ethnic studies programs that were founded, for example, the Afro-American Studies Department, alongside American Indian Studies Program, which is celebrating its 50th anniversary this fall, to really look at the ways, you know, that students face discrimination in the classroom, but also how they resist and how they work to shape the classroom to serve them.
And something that struck me, we were talking about the firsts of different backgrounds on the campus, resistance from leadership at various points to allowing at one stage women on campus. You know, the gist was we'd be happy to have women at a separate institution, or resistance to having Black students. Can you talk about the pushback as these groundbreaking students started to come in?
Yeah, you know, I think those first students, right, they always kind of face this challenge of trying to figure out not only what's your place on campus, right, socially, but also, you know, how you even get to campus. And so the story of women, I think, is a really, really interesting one because, you know, in one respect, UW is very early in admitting women. Other schools on the East Coast, there are some that didn't start admitting women until the 60s. And UW starts really early in you know, the end of the 19th century. But it's only because we thought we might go bankrupt. And so, you know, there was some interesting motivations there. And then, as you note, it was this kind of separate community. And so these women were kind of segregated from their male counterparts. And a lot of the leaders at the time were really against co-education. They thought it would be detrimental, not only for the women, but for the men. And so I think, you know, what it highlights is not only the tension of being a first and how socially difficult that can be, but also how, you know, that social difficulty does bleed over into the classroom and into the experience that you get. UW never has had any formal admissions policies barring any groups, but there are lots of things that keep students from joining this community and from being a part of this community. And so we tried to untangle and unpack those things.
As we wrap up, Casey, what are you hoping visitors take away from the in-person and/or online exhibit?
Yeah, you know, our goal is that we just want these stories out there and we want people to engage. These are many, many stories that may be familiar to people, things like the 1969 Black student strike. But there are also many new stories in there, many new individuals to meet who have really contributed not only to the UW-Madison community, but to, you know, the larger Madison community into the state of Wisconsin. And so we're really just hoping that people come, that they learn, that they engage, and ultimately, you know, ultimately that people begin to think about reckoning with our history and to begin begin thinking deeply about the way that history continues to affect us today.
Casey, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
That's Casey Lucchini-Butcher, director of UW-Madison's Public History Project. She's the curator behind the exhibit we've been talking about. It's called Sifting and Reckoning. It looks at the history of racism and resistance on UW-Madison's campus through the decades. That exhibit's open now at the Chazen Museum of Art in Madison until late December. You could see more online at reckoning.wisc.edu. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. First day of our fall drive, Ellen Clark joins me now, and we're here to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, programs like Central Time. Support from you and people like you is the biggest piece of funding for the programs you count on. That's why your support is so important right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have just a few minutes left this hour, and we have that dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000 in effect right now. We do not want to leave any of that on the table. It's a great time to donate because current members, including a member in Iola, will double every single dollar you give. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio, so double the impact of your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In that last conversation, we looked at this exhibit, looking at the history of UW-Madison and discrimination throughout that history and the way people achieved things in spite of it in many cases. It's an example of the deep looks we take at Wisconsin, past, present, and sometimes even future. It's an example of the kind of conversation you can count on here on Central Time.
Always so interesting. And Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported. That means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, which, by the way, will be doubled with that match, dollar for dollar match. You make the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose an amount that works for you and make your gift.
Ask for the WPR enamel pin when you give. It's a new design for this year featuring a radio tower. You can wear it on your backpack or jacket or hat. Broadcast your love for WPR programs when you are out and about. It's available today only for your gift of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've probably all had this happen. We spend money on something and then hardly ever use it.
I would say closets and closets full of clothes that I never wore.
I bought a pair of backcountry skis a few years ago that I have never used.
I bought an extremely cheap violin case that was so cheap that I threw it away within 10 minutes of opening it.
Unlike some investments, your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio is a good one. One you'll get value from every day. Make your gift to support the programs you count on right now. Here's how.
Make your gift. Get it doubled right now for just another few minutes at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Donate on this first day of our fall member drive. Central Time, Rob Ferret here with Ellen Clark. The WPR programs you enjoy, that you count on, are possible thanks to your support. Your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a difference for you and your entire community.
That's right. And now is the time. Give while you're thinking about it. Help us meet that dollar for dollar match. It'll take just a few minutes of your time to make your contribution to WPR.
Don't put it on a to-do list. Take care of it right now. Just a few minutes left to get in on that match. And only today can you get that pin as well. Give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Right now, it takes just a couple few minutes. You'll have a great feeling of supporting the programs you value.
And WPR is listener supported, and that means member drives are a really important time to hear from you. If you haven't donated to WPR before, we'd especially like to hear from you right now.
Any amount you give makes an important difference. Giving takes just a few minutes of your time. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make a contribution of, say, $10 a month or $120. When you do it, you make the WPR programs you count on every day possible.
And I want to remind you again, we have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect. We are hoping to match the $3,000 that we have. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support WPR. It'll go twice as far right now.
Get the match, get the pin. Support WPR. Ask for your limited edition Wisconsin Public Radio enamel pin. Features a radio tower design. It is yours. With a gift of any amount, if you do it right now, that gift is doubled at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Step up right now. One size fits all. This new pin is only available today while supplies last.
That's exactly right. And if you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you, thank you, thank you. Maybe you want to help us meet that dollar-for-dollar match and make an increase to your support by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Jelaine in Green Bay says, I want to give something to help support this beautiful resource, especially one that I use every day. Jelaine, thank you so much. Jelaine gets it. She counts on us each and every day, and she knows that we count on her and we count on you to help pay for it. Join Jelaine right now with your very important gift online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. We can't do it without you. Thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio.